The Force Field is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Listen to other great tech podcasts at www.techpodcasts.com.
From Charlotte, North Carolina, for IT service providers, it's The Force Field with Rick Savoia. And now, here is your host, Rick Savoia.
Greetings, providers. Welcome to the unofficial podcast for IT service providers, The Force Field. I'm your host, Rick Savoia, and during the next half hour, we'll cover the news, views, reviews, and interviews more about the IT industry and the Force Field community. Our call-in segment is open to all listeners Saturday nights from 10:30 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern. Call 407-278-5698. That's 407-278-5698. Or you can call in via Skype at Savoia Computer if you'd like to be part of the show. In our last two episodes, we talked with an IT service provider who opened his own computer store, learned how he did it, and what you need to consider before making that move from working out of your house to opening a storefront of your own. Today we'll continue our discussion with him and find out what it can cost to set up a real brick-and-mortar store. But first, let's take a look at what's going on elsewhere in the IT industry. A new online web-based service platform, WorkMarket, has just been launched in beta and is now actively recruiting techs. Founded by Jeffrey Leventhal, the original founder of the online service marketplace OnForce, WorkMarket is billed as the world's first labor resource platform, or LRP. According to the company, WorkMarket was built to help companies manage employees, vendors, independent contractors, and third parties, and can be used by any company, from the one-person shop to the billion-dollar organization. Version 1.0 of WorkMarket is scheduled for launch in late spring 2011. Techs are invited to test the beta version of the platform. To join the special beta invitation, simply go to www.workmarket.com or click on the link in the show notes in the RSS feed of this episode. Linux from Scratch is offering a free 318-page ebook called Linux from Scratch. This ebook provides readers with the background and instruction to design and build custom Linux systems. The ebook allows readers to fully customize Linux systems to their own needs and allows users more control over their system. Linux from Scratch is free to qualified professionals. To receive your free ebook, go to theforcefield.tradepub.com/free/W_LINU01 or click on the link in the show notes in the RSS feed for this episode. Mozilla reported 7.1 million downloads of its new Firefox 4 browser within the first 24 hours after launch. The new version of Firefox was released March 22nd, and while it did not break the record set by its predecessor, Firefox 3, which had over 8 million downloads in its first 24 hours, Mozilla claims Firefox 4 still boasted a strong launch with over 41 million downloads in the first week. Firefox 4 can be downloaded free at Mozilla.com. And finally, OnForce announced that it will now require techs on their platform to carry liability insurance, errors and omissions insurance, and workers' compensation by April 3rd, and charge them for it if they don't. According to OnForce, techs will be required to carry insurance and workers' compensation to accept and complete work orders on the platform beginning in April. Those who have their own insurance will be required to submit a certificate of insurance to the company in order to perform work. Those who do not have insurance will be charged a percentage-based fee for each type of insurance needed, up to 4.7% of the total amount of the work order, including parts and taxes. OnForce claimed the new insurance policy was necessary to please its buyers and was instituted at the buyer's request. The new policy was not received well by OnForce techs, who were stunned by the announcement, and many voiced their objections online in the OnForce forums and Facebook group, questioning both the integrity and the legality of the new policy and fees. Some techs who were outraged by the new fees said they planned to stop accepting work orders altogether, and a few even threatened to close their OnForce accounts permanently and move to other platforms, such as WorkMarket. The dissent in the forum and Facebook posts reflect a growing frustration among service technicians with the OnForce service platform. A growing number of service technicians are beginning to feel disenfranchised and believe OnForce has stopped listening and now largely ignores them. I know that many of you listening to the Force Field right now have been waiting for me to comment on this. So I will. To understand what I'm about to say and why, I want to remind everyone what the Force Field is all about. The Force Field was set up to help techs with the business of tech and providing you with information you need to work and deal with field service platforms and companies like OnForce is an important part of that business of tech. As I've said all along, I'm not here to bash OnForce. However, I do have a responsibility to report things as they are and simply tell it like it is. It is a simple truth, and it is this. OnForce is not your friend. It isn't a slam. It's simply the truth. To illustrate this concept, I will tell you what happened when I visited the official OnForce Facebook group last week and asked a very simple question about the new insurance fees. This is the scenario and the question that I posted. Now, OnForce charges these insurance and workers' comp fees according to the cost of the work order, not the requirements of the actual job. Let's say you accept two identical work orders. The distance, scope of work, the parts needed, everything is exactly the same, except one was accepted at face value for $55 and the other at $100. Liability, risk, everything is the same. All that changes is the amount OnForce bills you for the insurance. You pay 4.7% of the total amount of the work order. On the $55 job, OnForce bills you $2.56, and that's rounding up to the next penny. And on the $100 job, you pay $4.70. Now remember, both jobs carry the same liability and the same risk. Yet, OnForce charges the tech nearly double for the second job. If OnForce pays a flat fee to their insurance carrier for the insurance on each job, you are either covering more than your costs or are subsidizing other techs. And the question I posed to them on the official OnForce Facebook group is this. Is it ethical? Is this fair? Now, I posed to this question on the official OnForce Facebook group. And one of the members of the pro management team, who, out of personal courtesy, will remain nameless, responded to the question. But he didn't answer it. His response was to cut and paste part of the official announcement of the new policy and fees. A canned answer, and one that was totally unrelated to the question at that. It's somewhat insulting when you ask someone a question and you receive a canned answer instead of a personalized one. It tells you that the person to whom you are trying to communicate with doesn't consider you worthy of his time to speak with you directly. But it is a sign of complete and total disrespect to respond with an answer completely unrelated to the question. It says that the person is not even listening to the question, and doesn't want to hear what you have to say. So I responded that he had completely dodged the question. The question is, if I complete two work orders for the same identical job with the same identical liability and the same identical risk, one for $55 and one for $100, and the insurance fee for the second job is double the fee of the first, as it is based solely on the amount of money I received on each work order and not on the measure of liability or risk involved in performing the work, is this ethical and is this fair? The next day, I got my answer. The only answer I expected to get. I was unfriended and removed from the official On Force Facebook group. And that's the news in the force field. Usually we have a commercial break where we showcase a specific personally approved sponsor. This week we're going to take a break from that and spend a minute or two getting to know the forcefield.net. Although it is the official home of the Forcefield podcast, it is really much more. It's a web portal with news, blogs, resources, and reviews from inside the IT industry. The Forcefield.net is intended to be a starting point in the search for resources to help techs learn the business of starting and managing a tech business. There's the latest news releases from major tech companies, reviews of new products and services, blogs and discussions about trending topics in tech fields, and sources of information for learning the ins and outs of the IT industry. The Forcefield.net also features the Forcefield Forums, a community of techs who collaborate, support one another, and discuss the issues vital to their businesses. In addition, there are articles, books, videos, and access to free industry trade publications, such as periodicals, e-books, and white papers, all there to help you learn more about the business of tech. The heart of the portal, however, is the IT Business Resource Directory. It contains a list of distributors, vendors, trade organizations, contractors, and other contacts, as well as financial, legal, and technical resources, tools you need to help you start and manage your tech business, and is available to all registered members. For instance, the Directory of Distributors is a list of suppliers who wholesale goods to resellers and computer shops for resale to consumers and end users. The National Contractor Directory is a list of companies who subcontract work to field service technicians and is the largest and most comprehensive known list of its kind available on the net today. This directory includes contact information for techs who are looking for field work as independent contractors. Techs can rate and review these companies as well, providing valuable feedback as to which companies are best to work for and which to avoid. Most of the resources inside the force field are accessible to members only. However, membership is free. To join, simply register at www.theforcefield.net. Join today and build your business inside the force field. You're listening to The Force Field, and this is the part of the show I look forward to the most, as it is the opportunity to talk to my fellow professionals in the field. If you'd like to talk, you can call me at 407-CPU-JOY-8. That's 407-278-5698, or through Skype at Savoia Computer. If you don't have Skype, simply go to the Force Field podcast episodes page at theforcefield.net and click the Skype icon located on the right sidebar. The download is free, the call is free, and the show is free. And you can't beat free. So call in and dare to enter the Force Field. In our last two episodes of the Force Field, we talked with Pat Palmer, an IT professional who owns and operates The Computer Guy, a computer store located in Hampton, Iowa. In part one, we learned how he opened his store, how he made the decision to jump from a home office to an actual storefront, and the considerations he made in staffing it properly. We also discussed why a daily commitment to attendance and punctuality is vital to its success. In part two, we discussed the advantages of having a storefront, the disadvantages of having one, and important things to consider when renting or leasing the space to set it up. Today we'll continue our discussion with Pat and learn more about how he opened his store. We'll learn how he utilized floor space in more than one way to maximize his investment, some of the costs involved in setting up the store, and how inventory management can make or break your bottom line as we continue with part three of our six-part series on opening a computer store. And we're talking to Pat Palmer. Hi, Pat. Welcome back to the Force Field.
Hey, thank you very much, Rick.
Thanks for being on the show again. Well, we've been covering a series on opening your own storefront here, and there's a lot, definitely a lot to cover. We've had to break this up into several parts, but I'm glad you're able to return and continue on with this. I think this is very important information for everyone.
Well, I hope it is. I hope that people are getting a little nugget here or there out of the information, and you know, if they can learn something from something I failed at, even more the better.
I feel much the same way. Everything I learned about this business, I learned the hard way, as I tell everyone. This is one area that was a very expensive lesson to learn from me. Although, like I said, it wasn't a bad thing. I mean, I wanted the storefront, and it was a great experience for me. It's just, there are a lot of things that you just don't anticipate, no matter how well prepared you are. You just can't really anticipate everything. And sometimes it can be an expensive surprise hiding inside when you start this.
That's right. It's just, it seems like there's something around every corner, and when you think you've got it figured out, then something else comes up.
Yeah. Yeah. And that brings us to the next question. Now, I know we were talking in the first part of this series about how you did a lot of extensive research before you opened the store. But aside from that research, once you made the decision to open a storefront, how did you really start the process? Aside from that research, what was the first thing that you set out to do?
I set out to convince my wife that it would be okay. And she didn't really have any problems or any qualms with it. She knew my business plan was good. I had the numbers to back it up. I'd talked to, I kind of played two against the middle with my advisors. I used one community college and their entrepreneur program, and then I kind of pit them against one of the universities in Iowa with their people on another. So I had two different colleges I was competing with, or had them competing against each other, you might say, getting the best advice from each side. And so we'd worked the business plan over several different times, a lot of what ifs, what if this, what if that. None of those ever really happened, but there were a lot of other what ifs that really did happen that I hadn't planned for. But yeah, it was just a lot of preparedness, and you need to make sure you've got some financing lined up, or you've got money in the bank, or you know you're going to have an income. We've kind of gone through some tough times financially as far as our economy. So, you know, that was kind of the X factor there, too, is when people weren't going out to the movies or out to eat as much, maybe they were staying home playing on the computer more, and then what happens if that goes south and they need to get their computer fixed, what do they do? So, yeah, there's just a lot of, we haven't really even talked about the financial end of it yet.
Oh, no. And that's a major part of it as well. In fact, as far as the financial aspect of all this is concerned, I think that's an area where a lot of techs are unprepared. Now, we're not talking, in your case and in my case as well, we're not talking about opening up a huge, you know, big box store or anything like that. I mean, these are smaller computer stores. Now, what was the square footage of your store, roughly?
I couldn't even tell you. It's 25 one way by 40 the other, so 600 square feet, I guess. So, and that's okay, just the storefront, but then I've got a back room.
Okay, and so that's not large. I mean, mine wasn't that much bigger. Mine was about 800, 900 square feet It was a little bit bigger, but not that much bigger at all. And you know what? A lot of computer stores are like that. You know, you go in there and it's what they call the hole-in-the-wall type of thing where it's just a little shop. And you really, you know, for the most part, you really don't need a large place to do computer repair or to sell a few computers or computer-related items out of the front of the store. In fact, I think a lot of customers kind of expect it to be a small shop because they're used to seeing them around. So we're not talking about, you know, a large place. We're not talking about a CompUSA sized place or a Best Buy or anything like that. These are small shops. So don't let the size fool you as far as the expense is concerned, because it can get very expensive quick.
Right. What I did was I did have some extra space in the front of my store. And so that's I kind of have what I call the bullpen. I went on Craigslist and bought six chairs from an insurance agent that was going out of business or moving, or you know, they're always remodeling stuff because they always have plenty of money. So I bought six chairs for $25 a pop. They were real nice chairs, office chairs. I had a coffee table, and so there's a little room in the front where you can bring your laptop in or whatnot, or just, you know, in the morning, you know, if somebody wants to come in with their cup of coffee and have it and chit-chat, you know, they can. I've got also to fill up the store. I've got a 46-inch TV that we have a computer plugged into, and I do a lot of teaching on that. The Digital Divas come in on Wednesday nights, and they do their scrapbooking, their digital scrapbooking. Mm-hmm. And so we've got some tables, 8-foot tables, in a square around that. So if you are teaching in a class or demonstrating or want to do a video cast of some sort, we can accommodate that too. So those are a couple services that maybe some people don't know about that we also offer in the store besides our tech work. So that kind of did fill up the front of our store. Otherwise, it'd be pretty empty.
I did something similar. I was primarily a system builder, so I sold computers, and I had four computer desks set up there, and then computers at each one, and kind of a situation they were set up in a way where people would walk in, they'd say, oh, this is what it would look like sitting on my desk.
Mm-hmm.
And I also invested in about a dozen or so folding metal chairs and a couple of other items, so that what I could do is, after hours, on like Tuesdays and Thursdays, I could hold a computer class.
Mm-hmm.
And teach certain things about computers and some basic computer classes. And I did actually have one where I held a class on how not to buy a computer, the proper way to go shopping for a computer and not to. And they were basic. They were free classes. It wasn't I was charging for those classes. Now, there are other classes that I did charge for, but those were free classes to get people into the store after hours. And mm-hmm. It was a great way to promote the store. And people love free. So, you know, that was a great way to do it. So it's a great use of your retail store space after hours.
Yeah.
And of course, that's another investment in time to make, but it can be well worth it.
Yeah, it is, because, you know, if you have some inventory in the store and you just get done talking about how to help people shop for a computer or add-ons to buy or whatnot, and you've got computers in your store for sale or some add-ons to buy, there you go. You might have a sale right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, adding up all the costs overall, how much do you think it cost you from conception to the actual opening day to put up your store?
Oh, probably $8,000 when I got all done with it. I mean, because even though I wasn't open, you know, I signed the lease on April 1st, and I wasn't open until July 1st. Well, that was still, you know, April, May, June, still 3 months of electric bill I had to pay.
Mm-hmm.
Still had to, you know, after I think I started June 1st, I turned the phone on and the fax machine, and middle of the month of June, I had to turn the internet on. And so you've got all those utilities, and depending on, you know, your situation, if you'll need a deposit or not, that's also something. Plus, if you're depending on your lease or whatever you have there, you know, your first month and last month's rent. I certainly bought myself my share of beer to give to people to help paint. I had to get the floor done for about $1,700. Had to the back wall was just a mess, and I just had to have somebody come in and re-drywall it, and we painted it, and so that was an expense too. So
wow.
Plus, you know, signage on the door and those little odds and ends that you don't realize that, oops, that's going to need to be fixed, and oops, this is going to have to be done, and, you know, we were going to have, a lot of computers in, so I had to get a couple of routers and some KVM switches to hook all the computers up and some monitors, and, you know, in my basement, I just had one monitor and one KVM, and now I needed a couple of those and a couple of decent monitors. I just couldn't use my old monitor that I was using, you know, downstairs that wouldn't look nice in the store, so I had to get a couple of LCD units, and so it was just a lot of, you know, shelving and your cash register expense, and of course you have to have cash that goes in the cash register, so that's an extra, you know, $100, and so yeah, it just all adds up. So I would say, you know, $7,000 was pretty much the minimum, plus I bought my folks' computer paper business from them, and so I added that into my shop where I sell copy paper and ink cartridges and whatnot for business, and so that was another $10,000 there that I bought from them. So yeah, it was at least $7,000 just on the shop itself, plus inventory. About, you know, I would say for me, I thought, well, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that. Well, I ended up doing a lot of those things. I said, I'm not going to sell computers. Well, I thought for my grand opening, I ought to have some laptops there, so I bought some laptops, and of course, you know, they didn't all sell the first day, and mm-hmm. and you're stuck with some laptops there. And lately, with the way things are, and you can order stuff and have it delivered overnight, it's silly to have a lot of things on the shelf. But, you know, we have a copy of Office, a copy of, you know, Windows 7, and a lot of one each of things where I can order it the next day and it comes in. But we sell a lot of hard drives, a lot of memory upgrades. So we do try to keep a lot of that stuff in stock. I thought, you know, DVDs and CDs to record on would be great, but I still have some of those sitting there from a year and a half ago. Just a lot of things I thought would go didn't, and some things that I had no clue, they're the ones that are going. So every time I think about ordering something, I think, well, that's just money sitting on the wall. Now, how long do I want to let my money sit on the wall? So something to think about.
And that gets into a different subject. We're going to cover that in a future show, too. I'd like to get into, for those who are really getting into opening up their computer store, because there are a number of things I learned about, you know, what to stock, what not to stock, certain items that you can stock and put your money into for the long term that won't expire so quickly, you know, that will have a long shelf life that's actually a good investment, and then other things that you just have to be very, very careful about and not buy a dozen of because they're going to go out. Now, some of them are pretty obvious, you know, things like memory. Memory prices are always going up and down. Hard drives, there's always a new model hard drive that's coming in, and then the others just lose their value quickly. But there are certain other items, like, for instance, cables. Someone's always walking in the store looking for a cable. And I could sell quite a few cables, and they're the sort of things that I can just put on the slat wall and pretty much forget about it because, for the most part, the cables, they're going to retain their value for the long term. They generally don't drop in price for the most part. And usually you can work out deals with cable distributors or cable manufacturers where you can purchase whole packages of cables and, you know, whole line of cables and not spend a whole lot of money on it.
Right. And for example, what we do is we do have some like 6 or 10 foot Ethernet cables, but my employee is really handy at making them. So we bought a 500 foot box, and that was like $50, and we charge $1 a foot, and so for $50 we can make quite a bit of money on cable when people need. Well, I need, you know, 16 and a half feet. Well, you got a 16 foot cable there for sale. That's not going to work. So yeah, we do have a lot of VGA cables in various sizes too, because you never know. We've got one that's 50 foot long, and you never know what somebody's going to come in and get. You know, we certainly, you know, always have them talk about 3 10-foot cables. You know, mm-hmm. So I only need 6 foot. Well, here's 10. Here you go. You know, it's better to be a foot over than a foot short. So that's kind of what we view on that. So, and then have a lot of USB cables, especially the longer ones. you know, the 12 footers that people might need. You know, you don't know, you got a printer across the room or a printer that's a little bit farther away than most. So yeah, we do carry a lot of cables but the handy thing about the Ethernet is just making them yourself.
Yeah. Well, you know, aside from the long shelf life on cables in general, there's also quite a markup on those as well. So you can actually get them pretty cheap and put a nice markup on it and do pretty well with cables.
Right. And especially for me, I'm 30 miles away from like a big box store, a Best Buy or Staples. So they'll check with me first. And if I don't have it, then they'll drive. But usually they'll pop in, Pat, you have a HDMI cable. Yeah, just got a couple of those in the other day. That's really handy. If I was in the market where there was a Best Buy down the street, maybe I wouldn't carry that sort of stuff. I don't know. But there's a lot of stuff I wouldn't carry since they do, and there's no sense in, you know, if you're going to be there anyway, they're going to pick it up. So the beauty of it is for me is I'm a half hour away from those things, so it's just handier for people to bop in and say, hey, do you have whatever? And, you know, my wife does work up there, so it's one email, and she can stop in on a noon hour and pick up what I need, and then this will be here bright and early tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, or come in right before 6 and we'll have it. So we can also do it that way, too, and then mark it up a little bit. But that's kind of how we work on parts anymore. I'm not going to carry any more printers. I'm not going to, you know, really do a whole lot with laptops. It's just money on the shelf as far as I'm concerned.
Well, there's no doubt that inventory management is a crucial part of managing a store, and it's something that can really make or break you financially. Even in the short term, it can do that. That's something else that when you're opening up a storefront, it's very, very important to research and make sure that you have a pretty good grasp of the whole operation of inventory management before you really start off, because that can get you.
Mm-hmm.
It can get you. You know, so you said about $7,000 pretty much to open up the store. How long did it take you from the time that you started, from the time that you opened the doors? How long did it take you to actually get the store open?
Oh, I rented it starting April 1st and I had a one time I sponsored in one of these bars. I had a ceiling tile, and instead of the ceiling tile being there, it was like a cardboard type of insert with my sponsorship on it. Mm-hmm. And after the bar changed hands, they didn't want to do that anymore. So I got my placard out of the bar, and I just put it in the window. And so people knew I was going to be downtown, and that kind of created a buzz. And I thought about putting, you know, newspapers all over the windows and kind of making a secret. And I thought, you know, I really want to promote this. I really want people to see the transformation in here, because it was going to be a great transformation. And so I kind of let people see what was going on. I know people were walking by, and so even if I didn't have anything to do that day because I was waiting for an electrician or I was waiting for this or that, I'd move the ladder from one side of the room to the other or move some things around to make it look like I was really doing something in there. Because, like I said, my wife had surgery in early May, and so there was about 2 weeks in there I really didn't do much except move the ladder around, just to give people the impression of something's coming in and it's going to be neat. And it'd be, like I said, I was working up there till, you know, 2 a.m. some mornings, and, you know, the police department would stop in and say howdy, and anybody else kind of working late would just pop in and say, hey, how's it going? And, you know, that kind of word of mouth would spread around as far as, hey, something new is coming downtown, and kind of built a little bit of excitement for our small town.
In our next episode, we'll conclude our discussion with Pat and learn more about how he opened his store. We'll learn how important it is to find the right location for your store, how hiring employees can make or break the operation, and how having a storefront can legitimize your business as we continue with part 4 of our 6-part series on opening a computer store. Well, folks, our time is up. I would like to thank everyone for listening, my kids for allowing me to do this without interruptions, and my wife for just putting up with me. If you would like to comment on the program, you can email me at rick@theforcefield.net or visit our website at www.theforcefield.net. Opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not represent The Force Field, Savoya Computer, or advertisers. All music on the show is original and was written and performed by Brother Rancid and the Brand New Pygmies. Our announcer is Felix DeCat. The show is produced and distributed by Savoia Computer. For the Force Field, I'm Rick Savoia. May the Force Field be with you.